Blog Talk Radio.
Bonjour, mes amis. Ça va bien? I hope we're all ça va bien-ing tonight. This is Sybil Brunchen, and yes, it's time again for Come Now, Don't Sulk, our live podcast on Monday nights, brought to you on the Blog Talk Radio Network, and we're part of the Here Be Monsters studio, and my producer, Gwendolyn Holden-Berry, is on with us tonight. We're broadcasting to you from all over the country. Gwendolyn's down in Florida, and Mummy is in New York, and her bay window, of course, with this quarantine. We're not allowed to be in the Chrysler building in the revolving ballroom of the Cafe Berlin. We've all had to shelter at home, so to speak. Our sponsor this week and every week is daughtersofisis.com, the fragrant memories of our ancestors. That's daughtersofisis.com, all one word. Check it out on your computer, your laptop, your tablet, or even on your cell phone. They have wonderful products, and Gwendolyn is their founder as well, not only of Daughters of Isis, but also of the Here Be Monsters studio, and she is their head chemistryatrix. She sits at her bench, as she calls it, all day, concocting the most amazing mind-expanding, sensory-expanding, sensual-expanding, metaphysical-expanding, spiritual-expanding products through our senses of smell. Gwendolyn, We are in the middle of agony right now. Agony. Can you say, I have three words for you. Agony. And I don't know about anyone else, but I need a scent. I need some fragrance that is going to lure me back to the table of the wanting to live. I thought about this this week.
What will I share with Mommy? And I have one. My grandmother Hecate. It's called Hecate's Cavern, and it's blended for getting ready to be in meditation. It's for the recovery from panic of being cloistered in an alignment with the crone or grandmother healing energy. Think of your grandmother and how she would take care of you. It's about how we have to face and embrace the fierce darkness right now within us. And it brings us some breath and a wider burst. Especially within our space, the blend is created for that, and it's made with the violet flower and some
violet.
Really
wonderful.
I paired it up with some very, very old patchouli and a little black currant, some cedar wood, and some wormwood.
Wow.
So those are the essential oils in that one. That one is, those are ancient, ancient fragrances that really evoke that grandmother quality of the wise woman who says, just settle down, take care, and then top it off with the violet flower. You know, that the
my golly.
Innocent scent of the violet, too.
But violets, and then you said old patchouli. What's the difference between fresher or newer patchouli and old patchouli?
Oh, sweetie, new patchouli, like late patchouli, is barely a whiff of patchouli. We call it aged patchouli now, but I'll tell you, nothing is as aged as it was 10 years ago. I have to goose it up with a little oak moss to give it a little more of that loamy, earthy, rich scent. But it's patchouli. There's no mistaking. So when
I always associate so much with the 1960s and 70s,
course,
when so many people were wearing patchouli. My goodness, in New York, it was like the flower children were all wearing patchouli. It was so exotic. And then what was the other? Wormwood. I don't know what wormwood smells like. I only know from drinking it.
don't we all? It's a very green, earthy scent. It's like ball up all of the grass that's been mowed and dig up the herbs that are growing around tree roots and roll them all together, and you have that a whisper of wormwood. It's unique
wow.
that, but it's very green. It's very herby. And then you mellow that out with just some good cedar wood. I use American cedar wood.
There was another fragrance that you had, another essential oil you put in there. You said the original was violet, patchouli, uh-huh. aged patchouli. And then what was the next one was?
I put some black currant in there to
black
combine.
Black currant.
Does
black currant smell
patchouli.
As wonderful as black currant taste?
Yes. Taste and smell are intimate lovers. You know,
yes.
when I'm sitting here and I've gone nose blind after 3 days of blending,
yes,
if I'm not
course.
Sure of something, I taste it and I get it right away.
Yeah. So. Black currant. Oh, my goodness. My goodness. Sounds delicious.
And it's a cool cavern that you're going into with this scent. This is a place that's safe, that gives you rest and repose, and it gives breath to your space. And everybody who is feeling right now, and I think it's much of the population on the planet, cloistered and a bit like, well, we see it going on. I'm here at Republican Hootenanny
yeah.
Central, you know,
yeah.
and all
yes,
these
yes,
people
yes.
out there, but they're there are many more people who are wise enough to understand we have to take care of ourselves and each other by staying home. And so this is a scent that will absolutely bring you to a place of breath. And it cleanses the environment too. If there's been any, you know, and I can, you know, in every home right now, there's little black spiritual balls of anger and, you know, scabbles and such, you know, and that. And in this house, most of them come from either one member of the family or another swearing out the television. So it's basically when you use something like a white sage or a dragon's blood, something that's aspurging. And the Hecate's Cavern is an aspurging scent. It does push back the nasty. So,
yeah,
you don't want to mess with Hecate.
Okay, all righty. Well, there we go. So we've got a fragrance that we can definitely defend ourselves and nurture ourselves with. That is wonderful. I want to remind people that our sponsor is daughtersofisis.com, the fragrant memories of our ancestors. And by listeners like you, we've had some people contact us and want to make donations to Come Now, Don't Sulk. And you can either be an anonymous donor or you can be announced as one of our online donors and our on-the-air donors. So please feel free to contact us. You can contact me on my Facebook pages or Gwendolyn on her daughtersofisis.com page and speak to us. And we look forward to hearing from you because we do encourage sponsorship at this time. Also tonight, you can call in. Our phone number this week and every week is 323-784-9639. That's 323-784-9639. Call in with anything you'd like. We have people call in all the time. And by the way, we've been, for those of you that don't know, we're on at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 7 Central, or your time zone equivalent. We are live on the internet right now in Australia. We are on live right now in Berlin, Germany. We have listeners all around the world. That is the wonder and the magic of our technology and the internet, is that we can literally be broadcasting all around the world simultaneously. And we welcome all of our listeners from all around the globe right now. If ever there was a time to be linked and linked in hearts and minds and hands and souls, technology maybe can help banish some of this extraordinary negativity and extraordinary strife that we're living through right now. Gwendolyn and I try so often to keep the show cheerful and bubbly and funny and light. And we have recently been doing recipes and home hints and all sorts of stuff like that. But and we can do that tonight if people want to call in. But until someone does call in, I want to just address a couple of things. Gwendolyn's home is in Port St. Lucie, Florida. And I told a little anecdote last week of how I had been on Fire Island, which is that strand of spaghetti on the south shore of Long Island. If you go to your Google Maps and look at it, you'll see that it's 37 miles long and about 200 yards wide. It's a narrow, narrow sandbar on which there are 17 little towns and about 85 cars. There are only cars on the two ends of the island. There are no vehicles in the main part of the island at all. It's all built on boardwalks, and most of the homes are seasonal. They aren't even year-round homes. They're just cottages, although some of them are multi-million-dollar cottages, but they still are cottages. I told the story that we have tons of Floridians on Fire Island who are their sunbirds or snowbirds, whatever it's called. They run in October back to Florida, and they come back up in May. And they spend the winter down in Florida, and they live all over Florida, mostly on the coast. I can't imagine that someone would be wintering in Florida and go to Lake Okeechobee or anything like that, but they mostly are on the coast. And one particular woman who will remain nameless, but I can promise you that she's very well known among the Facebook and Fire Island crowd, and my listeners here know who she was if I named her. She walked by the house with her mask half on, and I was out in the garden and on my deck garden, and we greeted each other. How are you? How was your winter? Oh, it was great, blah, 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 blah. And I said, and I innocently said, wow, amazing about the news out of Florida this week. And she said, she blinked, and the take she took reminded me that she has been yet another one of those crypto Republican Trump lovers, though a lesbian, and forget that, though a woman, who's enthralled to Donald Trump. It seems it's the biggest oxymoron in the world, as far as I'm concerned. Anyway, I saw her blink and sort of, she said, uh-huh. And I knew immediately, I was like, oh, that's right, that's right. She has been, you know, in Donald Trump's pocket for the last 3 years. And she's one of the, you know, the gays and lesbians out there that are supporters of his. I can't conceive of it. But I couldn't drop it. So, I mean, at that point, so I said, well, they said that the COVID cases are starting to climb. Now, this was like 14 days ago. And she said, no. She said, nothing's going on there. I just left. I said, well, it's in all the news. She said, it's true. That's not true. I said, well, they said it's all over Florida. She said, well, I'm from Palm Beach, and it's not happening. And West Palm, it's not happening there. And I said, oh, uh-huh. And then she went on, and she said, I mean, doing just fine there. We don't have those health problems. She made it almost a racial thing. It was very strange where she was going with it. So anyway, I sort of dropped it. And but Mummy, and you know this, there are times where Mummy is a tigress, and Mummy was born under the sign of the dragon. And I'm definitely an Aquarius. Aquarians are known for having very long fuses and are known for having they're the so-called humanitarian line. Lincoln had a temper. You know, they talk about like famous Aquarians who were like, once you cross them enough, they were volcanic. And that's me. And I couldn't wait to talk to Gwendolyn about this. The headlines this week are that the COVID cases are skyrocketing in Texas, in Florida, the whole Red Belt, completely all over the place, and that governors are scrambling. Only that moron, that mongoloid idiot, DeSantis in Florida, is not scrambling yet. He, God forbid he would admit that he was wrong. And so you have cases skyrocketing all over the red center of the country, and specifically in Florida, in Texas, in Oklahoma. And I looked for her, this woman on Fire Island. I begged that she would walk her dog by my house and by my garden, because I was going to absolutely zero in on her. I would not yell at her, by the way. I would not screech at her or swear at her. But I would treat her the way Katharine Hepburn treated the nice lady in Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, who had the art in the gallery. And if you remember that wonderful scene where Katharine Hepburn walks her associate out to the car and tells her to get in. Her name, I think, is Hillary. She says, "Start the car, Hillary." "Yeah, go ahead, start the car." And Hillary does, and she says, "Oh, Christine, you must feel just awful. Your daughter is dating a black man. Oh, my God." And Katharine said, "Yeah, yeah. Listen, start the car. Listen, Hillary, I want you to go to the gallery, and I want you to go to the front desk, and I want you to have them wrap all of your artwork up. And I want you to have them make you out a check." And then she says, "A check for a certain amount of money." And Hillary's looking at her and suddenly realizes. And Katharine Hepburn says, it's just that you're not the sort of person I want to associate with anymore. And I want to pleasantly but ruthlessly let this woman know that her delusional thinking in this day and age. We try to cut people slack, and we try to be gracious. We try to be live and let live. We try to let people have their space. We try to let them have their personal liberties and their God-given rights and the Second Amendment and the 39th Amendment and the 312th Amendment, you know, that says you don't have to wear a mask because you're an American and it's your right not to have to wear a mask during a plague and all of that. We try, but you know what the bottom line is? The bottom line is, go fuck yourself. That's the bottom line. It's like, are you joking? We have people right now who are not wearing masks. They refuse to wear masks. And it's because it's their God-given right not to wear masks. Just as we have idiots on Park Avenue and Fifth Avenue and in Podunk, Buttpoke, Idaho, who don't want to vaccinate their children against measles. Well, you have a right to endanger your children. But you do not have the right to endanger our children. Part of the Constitution and being in this country and in America is to respect everyone's rights. That's why we severed ourselves from George III. You're not the king. You're not the king of America. You don't get to decide that you don't wear a mask and that you can endanger everyone around you. You're not the center of the universe, and you do not get to do that. You want to raise your children with the danger of them getting measles? No problem. Go live in Appalachia. Go live in a shack hundreds of miles away from everyone else with a washing machine on the front porch and your car up on cinder blocks. You have every right to live like an idiot in the 1600s. You have every right to live in the 17th century. Just don't do it near anyone else who's trying their best to make it in the 21st century. That's personal liberty. That's taking responsibility for your personal liberty. That's simple. You don't get to exhibit your personal liberty at the end of my nose. Your liberties end at my nose. And that's the way it's going to be. And this idiot woman who now is up here and I guess is only watching Fox, but even Fox is admitting now. I mean, even they have to admit that the earth is round. So this, I'm giving all of you permission to stop living in the age of Aquarius and the love and the love in. Blah, blah, blah. You can draw the line. Draw the line. People are drawing the line. I was standing in line in the grocery store in Cherry Grove, the beautiful little grocery store there that is just like a gourmet wonderland. Absolutely wonderful. Reggie and his wife have made it absolutely beautiful. And some moron walked in without wearing a mask, walked all through the store, finally got up in line, and then had the nerve to pull his teeth. When people started staring at him like he was an idiot, which he was, he pulled his T-shirt up in a vain sort of sad C-minus attempt to mask his nose and mouth. And Reggie let him have it, and his friend. And his friend, who was wearing a mask, was mortified. And the guy that was pulling the T-shirt up scampered out of the store and sort of was horrified because people were staring. And his friend had to stand there while Reggie berated him for having such a stupid friend or boyfriend, whatever it was. And it was like, you're an idiot. In this day and age, you're going in and thinking that you can pull your T-shirt up at the last minute when you get up to the register. But do you have to be? You know? So it's time for all of us, black, white, gay, straight, men, women, paraplegics, Olympic athletes, geniuses, morons. It's time for all of us to begin to live in a responsible, community-minded way. We owe it to each other to be responsible. And we cannot stamp our foot, you know, our feet and say, well, I have a right. Pal, you have no rights. Your rights are a privilege. We are lucky to be living in this country, and we owe it to this country and the founding fathers and the risks that all of the people have taken to keep this country up and running. We owe it to them to be responsible. That's what we need to do. So that we're at 8:20. So I've spent the last 13 minutes going into that. And Gwendolyn, I want you to weigh in now. Mommy's going to get a drink. I think I'm going to have a piece of whiskey. So you go ahead and you weigh in now. Gwendolyn, are you there? Uh-oh, we're having a technical difficulty. I wonder if Gwendolyn is on the air. All right, well, we're going to try and figure out what's going on. I would like to open the floor, though, to people to call in. Our number is 323-784-9639. That's 323-784-9639. I did have some questions. I wasn't going to get into, like, little innocent topics tonight, but I thought that I have a list here of people who asked me questions. By the way, I'm going to be posting recipes more on SybilBrunchen.com and on SybilSez.com. That's SybilSez.com. So you can hello? Gwendolyn?
Yes, Mommy. We've had some mercurial quicksilver going on, and I'm getting back by calling in. I'm terribly sorry for being off.
Were we on the air, or were we off the air completely during all that time?
You were on the air. I was
off.
Oh,
so, okay. Okay, well, I asked you a question, and I didn't hear you, so I thought, okay, well, she's been zapped. They didn't get Mummy, but they got my poor Gwendolyn. So I didn't do that whole diatribe to empty airwaves. I went on and on and on and on. Was I on the air?
Was I
on the air?
You absolutely.
Okay.
Could you hear me?
And
you do have a caller.
Oh.
I could, yeah. You do have a caller.
Okay, I'll take the caller.
Okay.
Hello.
Hi. Hi,
who's
it's Pamela.
Pamela, how are you?
When I was listening to you just a moment ago and heard you talk about the speech that Katharine Hepburn said in Guess Who's Coming to Dinner?
Yes.
I had to look it up and I had to read it.
Uh-huh.
And it is perfect.
It's perfect, so lovely.
What you need to tell that. Yes. Yes.
It's
just
so
wonderful.
Lovely. That's that moment in Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. I think that's one of the moments that's, well, she got the Oscar for that movie. But it's one of the moments that won her the Oscar. It is so funny and deadly that she takes that high society snoot out to her car. She walks her out away from, you know, Sidney Poitier and Catherine Houghton. And she walks her out, and the woman is like, oh, my God, you must feel terrible. Your daughter is dating a black man. Oh, my God, it must be horrible. And Hepburn is saying, yes, yes, and, the girl, you know, being very considerate, and gets her in her car, puts her in her car, and then closes the door and leans into the window. She's Hillary, and she does that whole speech. And then when Hillary finally realizes that Hepburn is saying, you know, get lost.
Right, take the $5,000, which I feel you deserve, and get permanently lost.
Take the $5,000, which I feel you deserve. She kills her with kindness. What I love is the condescension. She kills her with kindness and then says,
I just don't want to know you, Hillary, although I don't. It's just that I'm afraid that we're not really the sort of people that can afford to be associated with.
Yeah,
associated with. Absolutely.
It's the most brilliant writing. I mean, the whole movie, it's one scene after another after another. When I hear that people have never seen Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, it's like this is our American – this film is one of the most important art things that the American culture has contributed to the human race in all its thousands of years. And we as Americans owe it to visit our Museum of Film – just the way the French owe it to themselves to visit museums for paintings. You know what I mean? It's like our show business is the incredible contribution we've made to the human race. And those stories are living commandments. You talk about the Ten Commandments. Hollywood has produced films which are iconic, which are epic lessons for the human race to hold to its bosom forever. And that movie is filled with lessons that are so important today. Don't you think, Pamela, that movie is like more important today than it was when it was new?
Exactly. Exactly. It is. It speaks volumes, especially in today's society. Oh. I mean, more so, I mean, it was very quote unquote racy for the times back then.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes, yes.
But
was banned.
You know,
the movie was banned in several states. You couldn't see it because there were many states that legislated against it as being communism, degeneracy, that this was anti-Christian, that this was amoral, that this was anti-American. And what is wonderful about the movie is it's not just a movie about black and white prejudice and that sort of thing. It's about the fact that two intellectual, wealthy white liberals in San Francisco of all cities – so it's not the only way it could be this equal would be in New York City. But they are intellectuals in Fagtown, San Francisco, you know, artsy, crazy, kooky, you know, sophisticated San Francisco, that they are being forced to examine their own feelings about racism. So that's why it's so appropriate for today. 50 years later, that movie is appropriate for today because it says that we all have to be on our guard for watching for racism. And by the way, the movie also broaches the other aspect of it, which is black on white racism, because Sidney Poitier's parents have to examine how they feel about their black son dating a white woman. And what did they think about that? It's fascinating. The movie is full of messages.
It's full of messages and just that people wouldn't – it's hard because people rely today on special effects and they rely today on they wouldn't be able to understand that while Katharine Hepburn was doing this speech and she did it without a cuss word. Because they didn't do that back then. I mean, I watched one of my all-time favorite movies is The Women. The original one with Rosalind Russell,
of course,
and Norma Shearer and Joan Crawford. And just to watch them I watched the trailer once and I own it, you know, several copies of it. And I watch it every time it's on and I DVR it. And I'm like, I don't know why I DVR it when I own it. But and just to watch the trailer of the thing, it's all about men and there's not a man in it.
Yes. There's not even a male dog in it. There's
not
a male thing in it. Yes.
But
it's so clever.
The whole movie revolves around the men.
Right. And what, yes, it's very interesting. I wanted to mention something, and I had brought this up at a cocktail party last summer out on Fire Island, and everyone said, oh my God, Sybil, what an idea. Oh my God, you should be on the, you know, the Screen Actors Guild committee. And I said, but I am a member of Screen Actors Guild, but I hardly think they'll ask for Mummy's opinion. But I said, we were all having, it was fag chat about movies, and we were all going on about our favorite movies and how they were pertinent and what was good. And a year ago, it feels like a century ago, if somebody had told us that in a year we'd be wearing masks, that we wouldn't be able to be at a cocktail party, and that the world
right.
would have been changed, you know, overnight practically from a plague, you know, that would have rocked the economy and everything, we wouldn't have believed it. Anyway, one thing I said at the party, and people were like, oh, that's such a great idea. And it was this, that Hollywood, that the board of directors of the Oscars, the Academy Awards, should have a committee that examines past films, and that they should pick a film from the vast body of brilliant work that has been done. We're now, you know, over 100 years now of film.
Right.
Film is over 100 years old now. That they should pick a movie and award it an Oscar for being a great movie that has lived on, that it's an icon Oscar. And it can be a movie that had won an Oscar before,
right.
or it could be a movie that never got an Oscar, but that should in retrospect get an Oscar. I don't know that you can do it for, you know, the actor and the actress and all of that, because then you'd
right.
have to do it for best costume mistress and best prop boy and best, you know, boom mic operator. But
right.
best movie in the terms of what that film has lived on as. And I think it would be fascinating to have movies win that were failures originally.
Mm-hmm.
There were movies that were failures. Vertigo by Hitchcock. Vertigo by Hitchcock was not a successful movie. It's a Wonderful Life was not an enormously successful movie. The Wizard of Oz was not Gone with the Wind. It would be interesting to have movies that have lived a life literally as a living being, as if the film was a living creature that was still among us, affecting and changing human beings and their lives. And I'm telling you, Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, to me, would be on the short list. That would be a movie that people would revisit and said, that committee would say, oh my God, this movie is as important today as it was back in 1968.
It's yeah.
just amazing. And it,
absolutely.
I just wish they would, I would love, you know, for some committee to say, you know what, we're going to give Oscars to movies because they are 50 years or older.
Mm-hmm.
It should be something weird like that. Like if you wanted to come up with anything, a movie that was 50 years or older, something more recent, no, not maybe, you know, maybe not. But it would just be interesting if the Academy would start to recognize movies that lived on and were still changing life. And were not just something that TCM, you know, Turner Classic Movies and Ben Mankiewicz would dig out on a Saturday night, you know, with a guest host.
Right.
It's like, no,
but
no,
then
no.
But they need to bring them to the forefront because people don't know about them.
Yes, I'm glad they do that. I'm not saying that that's wrong.
I'm saying what you're saying is
yeah.
the Academy needs to bring them forefront because
yes.
today's society doesn't want to be bothered with it, especially if it's in black and white.
Oh, that's another thing. That's another thing. And I'm so glad that the colorizing thing that was going on 10 years ago, 20 years ago, died. That, you know, it happened a little bit, and then people finally said, this is ridiculous.
I hate when they do I Love Lucy and they colorize it. It drives me crazy.
I can't believe, Pamela, I can't believe you said that, because the I Love Lucy things it's kind of
they
forlorn.
They just lose something for me.
Yeah.
It's like, this is not I Love Lucy. This is somebody took a crayon and colored here.
Yes. Yes. Yes, exactly. It's Je t'aime Lucia. It's changed completely.
Yeah.
Me amo Lucy.
Yeah.
Me gusta mucho Lucy. It's like, no,
yeah,
don't change it at all. Just leave it alone.
Leave it the way it's intended to be.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know? And which brings me to a question I wanted to ask.
Uh-huh.
With everything going on now in this world, they you know, in the talk of taking the statues down and you know, changing the names of streets and all of this and that. And I understand the movements that are wanting to do this and why they want to do it, but for me, it's hiding the history of where we were and
that's
how we learned
point.
From it to grow.
Yeah, that's a very interesting point. That's a very interesting point. It is a very, very tricky subject. I happen to be appalled that New York continues to dine on itself, that it tears things down and puts things up and tears things down. And New York is the least history-oriented city in the history of the world. It's a miracle that anything exists that's older than 25 years at this point. New York
right.
simply wants to throw everything into a wood chipper and put up a new plywood thing. And
mm-hmm.
so for me, I understand and sympathize and empathize completely with the Columbus controversy. Columbus
right.
did in fact come. He did in fact come as a conqueror. He did in fact, you know, he and the entire Spanish invasion of the New World decimated everything. When you think about all of those extraordinary civilizations, albeit that they were violent, of course, and all of that,
mm-hmm.
but that they were so elaborate, they took their artifacts and smelted them down into coins. They took museum pieces of gold and silver and melted
and
them down for the
those.
Church. Yeah, it's incredible that they did that. So I'm seeing this week that the Columbus Circle monument will soon be gone. Now, as a New Yorker, that's one of those places where you come uptown and you hit that yeah. circle, or you come downtown down Broadway and you hit that circle from every direction. There's like five different ways of hitting that circle. You enter mm-hmm. that circle and spin around and then go off to wherever you're going. My own experience is in the Gay Pride Parade. We went down to Columbus Circle, you know, and did the turn. It's a very strange thing to know that monument, which has been there for ages, is going to be taken down. And there's really no way to take it down gently. You see, Teddy Roosevelt's statue is going to come down, and they're not going to demolish it. They're going to take it down, but they're not going to saw it into pieces. The Columbus Avenue Monument, it's concrete and limestone, there's no way to bring it down without demolishing it.
Right.
And I don't know what to say about this. It's strange. I certainly understand that Confederate statues, you know, technically they were traitors. I mean, and it was amazing that we, you know, that Lincoln was so circumspect that he said, you know, let's be, you know, kind and conciliatory after
appeasing.
The war.
Appeasing.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was part of Reconstruction, was making sure that we welcomed them back into the bosom of the country.
Right.
But
the indigenous community, see Columbus as a colonizer,
exactly.
along with a lot of them. The Spaniards that went through our southern neighbors, the conquistadors.
Oh, Pizarro and Cortez,
We committed genocide on the red
yeah.
people.
Yeah.
And that's unforgivable. And what we've done with the land, I am standing aside on this one. And I'm saying, I stand with my teachers and my brothers and sisters in the nations. And yes, the colonizers have to be shown for what they were.
Yeah.
I know the significance of Columbus Circle, but what could we make it that it would be a healing to put something in its stead that said, this has been here ever since when as a
yeah.
part of New York? And because I get what you're saying, Mommy. I totally get it. To go to New York for me, the last trip in was like, because I hadn't been in a while, not since 9/11. And I was just stunned. I was like, what the hell? You know, this is
yeah.
because some of the most beautiful neighborhoods, some of the most wonderful old home. It's just that you're absolutely right. It's like they take a wood chipper to it. I agree.
Yeah, well, that is another subject that we can get into at some point about, you know, what are cities doing to themselves, New York being at the forefront of that. Boston has been much better about preserving their history and their beauty. But you go there and you talk to Bostonians that are in the know, and they're wringing their hands. They're horrified at what's going on in Boston. So that's another subject. But back to this about what do we keep and what do we get rid of and how do we keep what we keep. There were people that said, you know, take down the statues of the Confederate soldiers and their heroes mm-hmm. and put them inside museums. And then put
yeah.
plates beside them saying, this is General so-and-so. He did such and such. He died in such and such a battle. And he owned 350 slaves. Come up with the good things, come up with the bad
yeah.
things.
Yeah.
One of
yeah.
the things that is.
And that's.
What were you going to say? I'm sorry.
I was going to tell you I have another caller, Mommy.
Oh,
do you want
okay.
me to bring
well,
them in?
No, not yet. I want to just finish this one thing. I want to just address this. It's so important for us to remember that a bunch of white people in the 1700s were angry that they were underrepresented. They weren't enslaved. They weren't serfs. They were underrepresented in the British Parliament because they were colonists in the New World. And they were very angry with George III and the British monarchy because they weren't being represented equally with British citizens. That once you came to America, you became a second-class citizen. You weren't as important.
And you provided goods and services, tobacco. All kinds of goods and services went back to England.
Exactly. So they were, and that's why Ben Franklin said the loss of the colonies by George III was one of the most tragic, stupid wastes of wealth that had ever existed. That George III would allow this to get so bad that he would lose the colonies. Ben Franklin's point was that this was a catastrophe which people would stand in amazement at the rest of. You know, the history, American history, the world history, that no one would believe that George III would have wasted such an amazing opportunity and such an amazing, thing as the colonies. Anyway, back to this, Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, John Dickinson, all of them, they weren't slaves. They were inconvenienced British subjects. They were angry, and they fought, and they risked their lives. And they changed the world by creating this new democracy, right? And yet they ignored the fact that they were doing all of this highfalutin stuff on the backs of slaves and indigenous people, Native Americans and blacks and anyone else other than the white British colonists was to be used as machinery to build this. And they knew John Adams and Thomas Jefferson, even as a slave owner, soon to be to free his slaves, Ben Franklin, a lot of the Northerners were saying, we can't do this with a straight face. We can't be declaring that we're being enslaved by George III, and then we are enslaving people to build this new democracy. It's bizarre.
Yankee.
We will be punished.
Yeah,
we
Yankee.
Will be punished forever. And of course, that's what happened. Well, I think it was Ben Franklin was the one who's – I'll look it up – was the one who said that within 100 years we will be punished for this, that this will come and haunt our grandchildren. And he was right.
Mm-hmm.
Less than 100 years later, the country was torn to pieces and Europe stood stunned. The Europeans watched in horror as the press came out about the Civil War, the fatalities, the fact that we would burn our brand new cities to the ground. Richmond, Virginia, gone. Atlanta, Georgia, gone.
Atlanta, yeah.
And the ultimate, New York City, racked by
New
draft
Amsterdam.
Riots.
Yeah.
New York itself, New York was absolutely convulsed with people being murdered, lynchings, burning buildings, everything. The city went nuts during the draft riots in 1863, this country nearly burned to the ground over all of this. And it was because we built this country
on a lie. On a lie.
Right. And now
and they
here
knew
we
it at
are.
The time. And now here we are. And now here we are. We still are roiling around. You know, we're still convulsing. We're still vomiting.
But the whole world, the whole world, the whole world has taken up the lamp that's been flickering in Liberty right now over
so
Black
right.
Lives Matter.
And
yeah. the whole world is saying, damn right, brown and black people matter. We all matter. Enough is
yes.
enough. This isn't just America. This is planet Earth.
Yes. We lost Pamela there. Is she the one calling
no, I'm
back
here.
In? Oh, Pamela, I'm so glad. Oh, Pamela, that was we really went off on a tangent on that. I'm looking at the time. I'm going to have to take this other call, Pamela. I'm glad you
all
called
right.
in again. You have a wonderful
all
week,
right.
and thank you for bringing that subject up. That was such a good subject. Thank you.
No problem. Bye-bye.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Who's our other caller?
I'm opening the mic now.
Okay.
513 area code.
Hello, caller.
Hi,
Hello,
Hi
caller.
Gwendolyn. It's Stephen Russo's in Cincinnati-ish.
Stephen, how are you?
I'm good. I'm good, sweetheart. Good subject there. I just want to throw in a cent or two. You know, your comment about, you know, Lincoln's deliberate nod and, you know, to, you know, reconciliation, you know, is a good one and very important. And also, as is also the you know, pointing out that, of course, many of the founding fathers were slave owners and that the Constitution
yeah.
was a lie because written
yeah.
into it was black people were only 3/5 of a citizen, you know. So, yes, that's a
and
lie. And now
and
we have to live up to the intentions.
Stephen, it took them forever to get to that. They didn't.
Right.
3/5 was considered by the fanatical.
Oh, yeah.
Conservatives.
Oh, yeah.
That was considered
right.
like, what? Why are you giving it 3/5? That's
right.
ridiculous.
Why are you giving
they're nothing.
They're
donkeys.
They're animals. They're property.
They're livestock.
Right. They're donkeys.
Yeah. What
right.
are you talking?
Right.
Give a pig a vote. Give a sheep a vote.
Right. Right. But, you know, Lincoln saying, well, let's reconcile, you know, is that's a good point. But, you know, my feeling is, you know, that was then over 100 years ago, and this is now after
yeah.
we tried to bring them back into the fold. After Jim Crow, after decades and decades of, you know, denial of rights and just continued efforts to suppress them and treat them like animals still, all the stuff that's happened recently, and this is now. And as far as I'm concerned, like you said, well, they were traitors technically. Well, no, exactly. Now, they weren't treasonous. Treason applies to cooperating with a foreign enemy with whom we have declared
right.
war, but traitor certainly describes it. So they were... They created an insurrection and a war designed to destroy their own country against the laws of, you know, their own country about fighting your own government, and it's killed hundreds of thousands of people. So, you know, and when these things were erected, if you Google NPR and these statues, you know, the majority of a large pulse in them being built like about 50 years after the war ended, and then another pulse in the, like, 40s, 50s, and 60s. And they were explicitly built by people who were white supremacists who said, boy, we sure wish we had won this war. They weren't like about Southern heritage. They were glorifying the slave culture and these men that fought to destroy the country. So in
yes.
my opinion, they absolutely should come down. No, today, in today's day and age, put them in a museum, do something, you know, but they should not be being glorified, which is what a statue does. And also,
yes.
it requires tax money on public property. So our taxes are paying
it's
for that. So, you
yeah,
know,
right.
that's my
And Stephen, your point is very well taken. A statue by definition
right.
in a public park, in an intersection, you know, of a public square, is a way of the society saying, we aspire to be this.
Right.
We admire and aspire to this. Yes. And that is where... We should, you know, it should either that or the statues should be left and huge, you know, signs in front of them down
right.
below should be engraved saying, this is General So-and-so. He did such and such and such and such. And he was a slave owner. Yes, and he was a slave owner. He and his family owned 10, you know, 1,100
That's
slaves. Over three generations,
right.
they had
Yes, absolutely. And their slaves were confiscated from them and liberated after the end of the Civil War. It's like, yes, we should put a few end notes in there in the same typeface, the same font size.
And they tried to destroy their own country in order to preserve their ability to profit off of murdering and torturing human beings. And we can never forget that.
They were traitors to the Union.
Yeah,
and
totally,
the other point about that, gentlemen, I don't know if you heard it tonight, but Ari Melber on MSNBC actually brought up the word with the Bill Barr situation and the Court of Southern District of New York and everything. He actually brought up the word traitor. It's the first time I've heard the MSM use the word traitor to define Bill Barr, Trump, or anyone else. Traitor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And as far as the Confederate flag goes, you know, I don't have any room for sympathies with that either. Some people say, oh, it's about Southern heritage. Well, that's just factually wrong. If you look up the history of the flag,
stars and bars,
it is explicitly about subjugation of black people and slavery. Exactly and explicitly. It's not about any kind of heritage. It's about we love slavery, period.
Yeah.
See,
it's Klan. It's Klan is what it is.
Yep.
It's going to be very interesting to see how we go about cleaning the house because I'm begging people, and I'm begging people tonight to stop posting these idiot comments on Facebook that Trump is behind Biden 30 points. This is a catastrophe waiting to happen. We must not continue to say that Trump is going to lose and Biden's going to win. And that this does two things. I was telling this to Gwendolyn. It infuriates and galvanizes Trump's followers. It makes them go to the polls they are galvanized to vote. They will be galvanized to wreck voting machines or to figure out online how to screw up the election.
Well,
and they will show up in droves at the election. And the other thing it does that is terrifying is it lures our own blue voters into complacency.
Yeah,
oh, my God.
Happened in 2016, totally.
And 2000. And in 2000 with Al Gore. We must not assume that everything is going to be just peachy.
Telling you right now, when and if Trump
loses, it's going to be we still have so much cleaning to do because Trump is the least of our problems. It's the millions of people who worship him that are still going to be in their homes, that are still going to drive to the voting booth in 2030 and 2040. We have cancer in this country. We have a huge cancerous tumor, which we weren't aware of until Trump got elected. And
guys, I mean, ladies, I have to tell you, here's the deal too. Uncle Trumpy there, he's pulling death bombs. He's got one planned for Jacksonville here with a convention. He's got people, they are booking up so much that they brought in luxury liners, ships, to house the GOP convention. And what he's doing is, you know, and most of these, I'm not going to wear a mask. This is where COVID, this is where plague is going to be spreading through these, because this is a further division of people. And
there's a guy at the place, a place I was at, I worked at briefly recently, no longer, eighth grade education, big Trumpite, I'm pretty sure, and he made the workplace required wearing of masks, and he did occasionally, one of the coworkers was just talking about a local bar had reopened, they said, require masks, and he said, well, I'm taking my business elsewhere. So that immediately made me think, I have to stay away from this person. He obviously believes the Trumpism that, it's all just fake news concocted to make Trump look bad, and it's all fake. And so he's going to go running around, not wearing a mask, probably being a super spreader, spreading it around, and then I could get it, then I could give it to someone, or I could get sick. You know, people with this attitude, it's just dangerous. You know, it's endemic, and you're we've just spent too long not recognizing, you know, that these people like this are still out there. And I, for one, I don't post anything about we're going to win or polls because there's just anything could happen. And who knows what knows what shenanigans or dirty tricks he has planned. Now, I post a lot of stuff that shows what an ass he is, and I will post some stuff saying how many people actually dislike him. He helps encourage, I hope, people on the fence to go, yeah, I don't want to vote for someone most 90% of people really don't like, actually. But yeah, I agree with avoiding anything about polls. That makes no sense. Anything could happen between now and election day.
Well, if the red voters, if Murdoch was really smart, they would continue to post these things like poll numbers, because what they should do is they should exaggerate them and say, oh my God, Trump is going to lose by 40 points. And yet, if they were smart, they would post that, because again, what it would do, it would galvanize and infuriate the red voters, and it would lure the blue voters into even greater stupidity and you know, complacency.
Spoke too soon. I wouldn't be surprised if they do exactly that, Sybil.
Well, I'm not a conspiracy person. I don't believe that the World Trade Center was brought down by Israel and Martians. So, you know, I mean, I just don't. But I do believe that John Kennedy was killed by more than Lee Harvey Oswald.
It was the Venusians.
I do believe that there are situations that have happened historically which have very, very complex undercurrents in them and conspiracy possibilities. And I must tell you something, that this particular thing with Trump, this election, I can imagine that Murdoch and Dick Cheney and Karl Rove and a bunch of them, John Ashcroft, all of them have been sitting at tables, wringing their hands, going, how are we going to ensure that Biden does not win, that the Democrats don't win, because they will get back in office and they will punish.
Carnage.
They will destroy everything. They will absolutely repeal all. Yes, they will chew up everything. I'm sure that Wall Street is holding its nose and saying, whatever we do, we've got to have Donald Trump back in office. And I would not put it past them to say, okay, well, one thing we can do is we can Trojan horse them. Let's put out things that Donald Trump is losing and it's going to be, you know, defeated, and let's infuriate our red voters, our three-toothed hillbilly red voters.
That's too good of an idea, quote-unquote good of an idea. I pray none of them are listening.
Well, Mummy's clever, but I can't believe that I'm ahead of anybody on the curve on this.
I know it's a possibility that, you know, he very, very well could win, but
yeah,
I would say this. COVID, this pandemic, this plague has changed people. I mean, your sensuality is being realigned right now. Everything is different, and nothing is ever going to be the same again. We are looking at a social paradigm shift right in front of us right now. And I think that a lot of the people down here that are being assholes and thinking that's because they don't realize that the governor is quite who he is, and they think that if he says it's okay, they're like, well, I don't have to wear a mask. It's not that bad. And yet Doctors Without Borders, which has never had to set up shop in this country, has just set up shop and put up 10 cities to take care of our migrant workers here, and not, I guess, about 60 miles west of me here right now. These are people who have come here to earn their way to being American citizens as migrants, like all our folks did. And, well, unless you're red.
Absolutely right.
It's stunning to me, because I've always contributed to Doctors Without Borders. They do a fabulous job. And now they're here in our little third world country of Florida to take care of the sick that no one will.
Well, you are absolutely right. And that tone that you're hearing right now is to let us know that our show is now officially drawing to a close. We've certainly filled it. Stephen, thank you for calling. Gwendolyn, we got off on a tangent there. We are brought to you by daughtersofisis.com.
And it was Come Now, Don't Sulk. We will see you next Monday at 8 Eastern Daylight Time or your corresponding time zone. Thank you, Stephen. Thank you, Pamela. Thank you, Gwendolyn. We love you all. Have a good night, everybody. Good night.